it's actually.
And APB, American Protection Bureau, voted number one best on Long Island for all your security needs. Call 631-390-9050. That's 631-390-9050. APB.
You need a body shop? You need engine repair? Auto Excellence, Collision Specialists, 631-261-6420. That's 631-261-6420. Auto Excellence. Jimmy, I gotta take a dump.
What?
No, I mean I need a dumpster.
Well, for all those needs, you need to call Big V Dumpster Rental, Long Island, New York, 631-900-DUMP.
Elm Logistics, for all your logistic needs, call 631-299-3595. That's 631-299-3595. Elm Global Logistics, pride, performance, and partnerships.
The Monty and the Pharaoh Show is brought to you by...
Because wine is your second favorite four-letter word. California wine, New York attitude, good fucking wine.
Yeah.
Tired of that same old breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Same old tasting scrambled eggs, burger, that dinner steak, ribs, or pork chops? Why not add a little bit of spice or just a touch of heat to make the difference? Change that scrambled egg with a little bit of Johnny Fabulous's John Cena Sr.'s Million Dollar Jalapeno Hot Sauce. Great on burgers, steaks, chops, and those barbecued ribs.
And Nitro's Garage for all your automotive needs. Call 646-675-2349. That's 646-675-2349. For all your automotive needs, Nitro's Garage, ask for Jack.
Do you treat your dog as part of the family? Well, so do we. So why not celebrate your pup's birthday with the ultimate party box? Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Party Pup Info, and let us make your pup's party or any celebration perfection.
M&J Video Games and Collectibles. Sport and non-sport cards, wrestling items, autographed items. We buy, sell, and trade. M&J Video Games and Collectibles, located at 1049 Queen Street, Southington, Connecticut. Call us at 1-860-479-9223 or 860-93-GAMES. M&J, Video Games and Collectibles.
Ho-ho, everybody. Welcome to another edition of This Week Wrestling Remembered, and the show that takes you back to the glory days of pro wrestling and, you know, not as much controversy as there is this year, this time around, but what a week in wrestling, I got to tell you, though. I'm your host and moderator for today's show, Joe What a Day Lowry, and I'm joined, as always, by my esteemed colleagues here. First up, let's go around the horn. We have the president of Thursday Nights, the incomparable Mr. Phil DeCesare. Phil, welcome.
Thank you. Wrestling fans around the corner and around the world, as Sheamus might say, what's the crack? How you doing?
Great, great, great to have you. Moving around the dial. Next up, he is the brother from another mother. He is the resident poet laureate, as I like to call him. Let's welcome the player, Mr. Benny Scala. Welcome, player.
The Thursday Night Delight, straight out of Playaville.
There you go. There you go. Next up, you know, you might see, you might catch this guy playing snake eyes out back for a measly buck, but you know him as the referee of the 30 and the moderator. Let's give it up for ESO Bruce. What's happening?
What's going on, guys? Just remember, points are always in play. So you better watch out and be on your best behavior.
As demonstrated last night.
So anyways, a lot of good stuff. Welcome to the show, guys. As you know, I did go to high school with Missy Beefcake, so I just want to get that out there. That's
come on!
Monica. Come on!
Where is he?
Where's Smitty?
You know, so this week's topic, it's a great one. Pro wrestling managers, greatest managers. We either loved them or we hated them, but one thing always stood out about them is that they could always talk on the microphone. You know, some were former wrestlers. Some, that way they could take that bump. I know a couple of them that used to take the bumps in and outside the ring. Some were just great character actors who just kind of fit right in with everybody. But, you know, they could sell their protege with a single sentence, all the good stuff. Now, obviously, we're talking greatest managerials. If we talked the entire list, we'd be here till next week. So we're going to try and narrow it down to 60s, 70s, and 80s. If we can touch upon later on, we will. But after all, this is Wrestling Remembered, and we want to go back to the glory years of pro wrestling and all that stuff. We want to welcome everybody in the chat. Thank you for tuning in. I think I saw the boss, Giovanni, was in there as well. Maria, Beth, everybody, Ja Will, Foxhole Willie, everybody, Jabini, they're all there. Thank you so much for joining us. Do us a favor while you're at it. Hit the share button, subscribe, like us. You know,
invite your friends too.
Yeah, jeez. Invite your friends. You know, we're here. So, anyways, all right, guys, who wants to kick it off? You know, let's go back to yonder yesteryear. Benny, you had forwarded me an article you did for Pro Wrestling Stories a little while back, which emphasized on these three right here: Bobby Davis, Wild Red Berry, and Homer Adell. What can you tell us about these guys? Because this is way before my time.
So I became a fan in 1968. These guys were the managers in the World Wide Wrestling Federation. I want to tell a quick story about Bobby Davis. He was the first manager that I ever saw. And he managed at that time a gentleman, I think his real name was John Quinn, but he wrestled in the WWF as Virgil the Kentucky Butcher. And so, you know, the usual formula, so that, you know, that Butcher goes through the prelim guys. Now on TV, he wrestles Arnold Skolin, who's Bruno's manager. And so I think Butcher's finishing hold was the pile driver, which he called the whammy. So he gives the whammy. He gives the whammy to Skolin. It sounds like something the Good Humor Man would have, you know. Try this whammy. He gave Skolin the whammy, you know, and then as Skolin is being carried out on a stretcher, both Davis and Butcher upend the stretcher, and Skolin, I mean, he was still in the ring. I mean, literally flew over the top rope and landed on the concrete floor. And then the next week, Ray Morgan, who was the announcer back then, I mean, some of the older people might remember him, great announcer. Always had the coffee and the black coffee and the cigarette burning. But Ray Morgan said, okay, fans, gave the address of White Plains Hospital to send postcards and letters to Arnold Skolin. And it's really funny because we had Davey O'Hannon on our pod, Dan and Benny in the Ring one time. And he said, you know what? I sent a letter to White Plains Hospital for Arnold Skolin. So, I mean, that's the impact of these managers. And, of course, the Garden was a sellout for Bruno and the Butcher. And that's what the manager did. The manager got enough heat where, you know, the ultimate goal was that Madison Square Garden match with Bruno for the championship. And it almost always was a sellout. The other two guys were great, too. Homer Odell wasn't in. He managed
Bull Ray. Like a post-World War II Nazi or something like that. What was that all about?
I think he did that gimmick in the Mid-Atlantic, maybe.
Almost like a Sergeant Schultz type thing.
Yeah, he didn't do that. He managed Bull Ramos briefly. Bull and Bruno opened the new Madison Square Garden, I think, in 1968. Bruno won with the backbreaker, and they were both gone after that. And Homer Odell went to Mid-Atlantic. while Red Berry was a mainstay for years, before he was a manager, he was a great junior heavyweight champion, NWA. I think he held it like four or five times. Great talker. Always wore the hat, the Rodney Dangerfield. Oh, looks good on you, hat. And but he managed Monsoon, I think, after Davis. He managed Hans Mortier, who was a great German heel.
Now, Benny, I don't mean to interrupt you, but obviously I wasn't around back then. Were these guys active on TV as well back in the
day?
Yes.
Active as far as intervening in the matches, or
no, just being. Did you see him every week on TV?
Oh yeah, I mean there was, they had the ringside. It was the ringside interviews with Ray Morgan any of the heels, and even with early Vince McMahon, same thing. You always had the heel, and you had the manager.
Right.
It was very formulaic.
And to piggyback on Joe's question, Benny. Did the managers back then make it to the house shows, or were they just strictly TV presence on TV?
You know, that's a really good question. I would say probably not. Now, I will say, I remember back in the day, like the Wizard or Albano, whoever Bruno was facing, they would walk to the ring with their charge. But once the bell rang, they actually left.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would not see like an Albano or a Blassie like in the 70s. You would not see them interfere in a match.
Very rare at the Garden, Phil, growing up, did we see these guys?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Speaking of the Evil Trio, there they are.
The Triumvirate.
The three wise men of the East.
Very rare did you see these guys in Boston. If you did, it was a special attraction because I think I can count on one hand of the 10 years that I went to all the Garden matches. I think I've only saw Blassie and Albano once.
Yeah. And Wizard.
I never saw the Grand Wizard. I never saw him.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think he did. I think he did the Garden MSG and maybe an occasional appearance elsewhere, a big show, but he was not a traveling manager like the other guy.
Did you see anybody at the old TV tapings?
Absolutely. I got to see, you guys didn't get to see Lou Albano. I got to see Lou Albano pretty frequently because he lived in Highland, New York, which is right across the bridge from Poughkeepsie, New York, where, that was one of the home taping grounds. I've seen everybody from the early 80s up until about 87, 88 when they stopped doing the TV tapings there. But no, I got to see the debut of Elizabeth. I've seen Bobby the Brain Heenan, Jimmy Hart, Slick.
The chat is heating up with a lot of good names, and we're going to get to some of these names that are out there. So sticking with the Evil Trio, one thing I noticed growing up was a couple of them at the time, only really outside of Captain Lou Albano with the numerous tag team champions he seemed to have. The first one I recall was Ivan Koloff with Captain Lou Albano. Absolutely. So these are some early pictures. Obviously, that was Captain Lou's only world champion at the time, right? During this era, he didn't manage anybody else. He was like the, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? He always fed Backlund the challengers. You know what I mean? All these guys, that's what they were there for.
So can I ask, guys, because you were around. So Lou Albano, he really was only up in the Northeast Territories, it looks like. It doesn't look like he traveled around much.
No,
he pretty much homesteaded.
Right.
When I first started watching wrestling, he was still around. He was an active wrestler.
Tony Altimore,
yeah.
Sicilian.
Right. Yeah. And he wrestled, he was not even a mid-carder. He was pretty much, he was upper enhancement talent.
Right.
And, Bruno was the one who said to him, it's like in the movie Caddyshack when Ty Webb said to Al Cervic, he goes, you're not good. You stink. Bruno said that in so many words. And he said, but you're a really good talker. How about I talk to Vince Sr. or Vince about making you a manager? And, obviously the rest is history.
Yeah.
One of the things, my early memories of Captain Lou Albano, and I talked about this when I became a wrestling fan. He was one of the guys that I first saw when I ran home and turned on wrestling. It was the Moondogs versus Tony Greer and Rick Martel. And there's Captain Lou Albano doing laps around the ring. going. I'm like, who is this freak of nature with rubber bands in his
hanging out of his cheek? I know, huh?
And put talk about the worst blade jobs. I mean, he didn't hide it. He just, you know, give him a scalpel. He's cutting open tonight. It's like,
yeah. And he wasted a perfectly good meatball sub.
Yeah, no,
do you remember that?
He slipped on it. Yeah, with Morocco, you know. So
the captain wore more food than he ate. Sometimes he's a little disheveled.
Hey, I got my education from Captain Lobano because I was in that. I searched high and low for that unborn virgin's goat milk, and I couldn't find it. I could not find it anywhere. That was crazy. Moving on with the Grand Wizard now, he did have a couple of champs, Stan Stasiak and superstar Billy Graham. So he was, you know, he was lucky, fortunate enough to unseat, I would assume, Bruno Sammartino here twice, right? Stan Stasiak?
Stasiak beat Pedro.
Oh, beat Pedro, that's right.
Yeah, and then Graham, beat Bruno. And
And of course, good old Freddie Blassie, he had to wait a little while, but he did end up getting his champion in the Iron Sheik when Ayatollah Blassie. Yeah, that was, I hated that. I hated that gimmick. I don't know why. I don't know. That was almost the beginning of the circus time for me with WWF pre-mania and all that stuff. But to me, I think when you think of Freddie Blassie, how can you not think of Killer Khan?
Yeah.
He was always in there. The legendary Khan and Andre feud right here. He was right in the middle of it. He attacked him on TV. I think that's the first time I shed a tear in wrestling is when they attacked Andre the Giant when he was sitting at ringside.
I remember.
During a TV show and all that stuff. And quick note there. You know, we all know is Killer Khan is the one that broke Andre's ankle. But, you know, stories have told that Andre actually broke his ankle getting out of bed. From what I heard, and that he had that operation done at Mass General. And the reason he had it at Mass General is because they were only
Beth Israel.
They were the only hospital in the, I don't know, Vince says New England. Now it's the whole entire U.S. that was able to give him that amount of morphine
That story is they used him as kind of a test pilot. Wow. And they asked him, how much vodka do you drink before you get drunk? And he told him, I drink a liter and I just start 1 liter and I just start to get warm a little bit. So they really based a whole anesthesia protocol on that, on, you know, I think on alcohol consumption.
Sure.
And one of the questions they ask people before they go under now is, you know, how much do you drink? How often do you drink? Right. How many glasses of wine? How many beers? That sort of thing, too. And so he really was the test pilot in many ways. And it's a miracle he came out of that. That was probably the most dangerous part of his surgery was that anesthesia. So, shout out to Boston, man.
Surgery was performed by Missy Beefcake. That's well kept secret.
Yeah. I think I went to high school with her. I don't know if you guys
do. Come on.
just to discuss that.
What's that? Oh, yeah, there you go. Another one that was always around, we talk about Arnold Skolin, Arnold Skolin, or however how you pronounce it, you know,
babyface manager. I mean, how many babyface managers were there?
I saw him live. It was Mass Superstar versus Bob Backlund, one of Backlund's last title defenses at the old Boston Garden. And they brought a TV crew out there because they were starting to sell the fact that Backlund's shoulders and all that were, you know, before the Iron Sheik and all that, it was starting to fill the injury angle. And what they did was the Mass Superstar actually gave the neck breaker to Arnold Skolin. He got taken off in a stretcher at the old guard. And the place was nuts. I've never seen that. I mean, it was insane how the Garden crowd reacted when Arnold Skolin took that outside the ring. And then he got carted off. I mean, the Mass Superstar needed a police escort just to leave the arena. So that was pretty tough. So,
you know, and that's back then when actions like that meant something before it was like every match, every show, twice a match. And on the topic of Skolin, who never interfered in matches, you know, rare did you see interference. The one time that I saw him interfere, I think Sergeant Slaughter gave him a cheap shot before the match or during the match.
Right.
But Slaughter had Backlund in the Cobra Clutch. Skolin grabbed the chair and whacked Slaughter. It was just the craziest thing ever, man. Yeah, and got Backlund disqualified as a result. But you never, ever, ever saw that. Chair shots were very dramatic back then. They really, really meant something, you know?
Well, the biggest interference will probably be history is right there in the upper left corner when he threw the towel in on Bob Backlund. with the Iron Sheik for him to be the world dramatic. Champion. So that was a big deal. You know, it was very rare that, to me, I never really saw Scalin or Skolin, or however you want to pronounce it, interfere in any types of matches. So, you know, because he was the proverbial baby face. So, you know, he always did right by the fans and all that stuff. But
I wonder how he got that gig, because he really wasn't needed. I mean, why did they put him in Bruno and Backlund's corner? I never could figure that out.
Wasn't he more of a backstage guy with Vince? Wasn't that
he was?
Yeah, I mean,
maybe that was part of his deal. You know, he could be on air as, you know, Bruno's manager, Backlund's manager. But
so, of course, the 80s a boom and a wave right now. And then all of a sudden we get this guy right here who had tremendous success in the AWA. Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Wow.
I'm sure that picture on the bottom looks familiar to you guys.
As portrayed by Mike Monty, the brain of Monty and the Vera.
But Bobby Heenan was actually a very talented wrestler who could take a bump. Watching some of the old matches, even in the AWA, he could fly around the ring. He could take a bump. He could sell it, whether it was the blonde hair flying around or whatever. But of course, he was the, you know, Nick Bockwinkle was a great wrestler and a great talker. Really didn't need Bobby Heenan, but you had two guys here that were like lightning in a bottle. Whenever you saw Nick Bockwinkle with the AWA title, you always saw Bobby Heenan right next to him. So, Bruce, you remember those days at all?
No, not that those early days. I didn't get to, you know, my wrestling fandom started up in the, I remember a little bit of the early 80s, but really from about 85 on, where the Rocket Wrestling Connection, I was that kid that they were gunning for. So, you know, I saw Captain Lou as that cartoon character, and Bobby Heenan was a cartoon character. And
so you kind of saw Captain Lou when you became a good guy then.
Yeah. I would have loved to have seen it in the heel days. Obviously, I've seen them in reruns and read about them, but, you know, unfortunately,
I think one of the greatest chair shots ever is the one when he hits the Samoans over the head to get Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas the title.
He hit Afro with the wooden chair.
And it got stuck on his head.
There were pieces of wood in his hair. I just thought that was great. But another guy, I'm just jumping around here, Sir Oliver Humperdinck. This guy had it going on. No doubt about it. He had that stable with Kevin Sullivan back in the day, manager of Bam Bam Bigelow. Why don't you guys fill in the blanks on this guy if you know anything about him?
My only dealings with him were back when he was in the World Class Championship Wrestling, you know, just before he came over to the WWF to manage Bam Bam.
Right, right.
Kevin Sullivan's whole deal in Florida, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was that? What was that called? The Ministry of Darkness or something like that?
The Army of Darkness.
I do believe a very depressed superstar, Billy Graham, started the karate gimmick with that outfit too, down in Florida before he jumped back up to the WWE.
That's one of the greatest to me. Like, I mean, I love superstar Billy Graham.
Yeah.
And I did not like the karate gimmick, but when he got, I guess Sullivan hit him in the eye with a spike, and then, you know, the next week Gordon Solie pans to this video of superstar Billy Graham laying in the desert. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. If you haven't, you have to see it. And he said, "I'm going to break the chains that bind me," it was just so epic. What a promo that was.
One of the first wrestling magazines I bought had a bloody Sir Oliver Humperdinck on the cover.
Exactly.
I was like, who is that guy? I'm like, why isn't he in the WWF? He would be later on, but like, unbelievable.
I think it was a Sports Review wrestling magazine, it might be that he was on the, I remember all the bloody covers for some reason. And my first magazine was a bloody cover, by the way, I guess.
They look like crime scenes, the magazines.
It might, as featured on True Crime.
Exactly.
Now, of course, 1984 comes around, and a guy by the name of Macho Man Randy Savage, he's on the lookout for a manager and all that stuff. And I think it was July 30th, 1985, on Championship Wrestling. All of a sudden, we get the debut of the lovely Miss Elizabeth. No doubt about it. She was, to me, the first female non-wrestler wrestling manager. She never wrestled. Does anybody know the background on her and how she even got started with wrestling?
Well, she and Randy met, I guess, at a health club of all things. I think she was managing the health club.
Okay.
What's that?
She was a receptionist or something that he went by every day.
Yeah, at the health club,
said,
right?
Well, I'm gonna marry her, and you know, he ended up doing it.
But how do you transcend that into being one of the greatest managers of all time? I mean, she was responsible for Macho Man winning the world title, the Intercontinental title. She was probably the first female performer in the WWF that graced the cover of a magazine in a bathing suit, of all things.
Yeah. I mean,
this is unknown back then. This was very not like it is an Attitude Era, but stuff like that you never saw. You never saw it. All of a sudden, okay, who is this lady? You know, and we didn't know at the time that they were really married back then. Kayfabe was pretty was happening, was alive and well, so we didn't know that.
Yeah.
So you know? This is one of my first wrestling memories was because this happened at the Poughkeepsie Civic Center, and yep. all of these managers coming out, and yes. Then he all of a sudden he brings out Elizabeth, and the crowd went absolutely bonkers, and you know, I'm not. It's one of those things. I was young. I don't remember which parts were from what I watched on TV and which parts were from when I was there. But that's it was quite a crazy night. And then a few weeks later, getting to watch it on TV was even cooler.
Of course, one of the biggest feuds in the 80s, she was embroiled in the Mega Powers. I mean, that was huge.
The people, she was never the mouthpiece for the people she managed. They were always the mouthpieces.
Right. Yeah.
She was just there looking good, which all she needed to do.
Yeah. And very rare did she make an appearance like at the Garden, although I was there in February of 86 when she just happened to be with Macho Man that night. And so wasn't the NESN cameras, the New England Sports Network cameras, the night he won the title over Tito Santana.
The brass knuckles.
It wasn't brass knuckles. No? Because the cameraman picked it up. It looked like a taped, you know, the inside of a tape roll, the plastic nub. It was all taped up. It was very, you could see it in the old videos.
Sure.
The cameraman picked it up and it caught Gorilla Monsoon off guard, like, wait, there it is. That's what he's holding up. This is what he used. You know, it was supposed to be brass knuckles, but it wasn't brass knuckles. It was like a tape holder or something with tape around it. So it was kind of neat. It was different, that's for sure. But
a foreign object, though.
Yep.
John's bringing up a great one, and that's Percy Pringle into Paul Bearer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, back in those days, you know, you'd mentioned in Poughkeepsie with the TV taping, you know, there was Mr. Fuji. He was in the ring awaiting to see if he was going to be selected as a manager for Miss Elizabeth. That was a big deal. His obviously greatest protege there was Magnificent Morocco and all those Fuji Vice videos and all that stuff.
Fuji General. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then, of course, who can remember? Luscious Johnny V. And there he is. I went to high school with his wife, Brutus Beefcake.
There's Mr. Misty Beefcake there. Yeah.
One person that was also in there was Jimmy Hart. He was in there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Very successful with the Hart Foundation, of course, the Honky Tonk Man and all that. But Slick wasn't around then. He came a little bit later.
Right.
Slick wasn't actually even in that ring. But, you know, those were just some of the managers that, you know, that were out there thinking they were going to get the dibs on Macho Man, but it turned out to be Miss Elizabeth. So that was kind of neat. That was a good little turn for us on TV on Saturday morning because we had no idea who was coming out.
I tell you who was a great, great manager, not in the WWF, but very, very underrated, was Gary Hart.
Benny, I swear to God, I knew you were going to say that, and I don't know how, Gary Hart. Gary Hart.
There are just so many, though. It's like I could have spent all day just cutting and pasting and all that.
Oh, yeah. There's just so many.
You know, somebody in the chat mentioned Cyndi Lauper.
Promos.
I mean, can we really count Cyndi Lauper as the greatest manager, even though it was pretty much a one-off with that one-year contract and all? I mean, that's debatable in a sense. Don't you think? Isn't that kind of debatable?
It is. I mean –
He did manage a world's champion, though.
Yeah, that's true.
She did, and she was the impetus for the Rock and Wrestling connection. So I think, you know, as was Captain Lou. So based on those two things, that gives them points right there, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
they were the king and queen of the Rock and Wrestling connection, no doubt about it.
Yeah, her, Hulk Hogan, everybody. I get it, Captain Lou. But when you talk about greatest managers, these are people that transcended the sport. So in a sense, I guess you could say she transcended the sport because – you know, she was part of WrestleMania, the Rock and Wrestling Connection, the War to Settle the Score.
Yeah.
Queen music videos. Oh, yeah. All that stuff. Another one that came to mind that I used to see in the magazines all the time before I got cable was this guy right here, J.J. Dillon.
Oh, yeah.
Big guy. I mean, I used to see these guys wrestle in Georgia, Black Bart and Cowboy Ron Bass. And those guys are pretty Mid-South area and all
Long
that.
Long Riders, I think, or something like that.
Long Riders, yep. But obviously, J.J. Dillon will be synonymous with the Four Horsemen, the original Four Horsemen at that. So that's kind of neat.
J.J. was a great talker. Yeah.
It's funny that he was a great talker for the Four Horsemen when none of them needed talking at all. Blanchard, Rhodes, everybody. They were all great on the mic. Flair. These guys were good. Even Barry Windham was great on the mic.
That happens sometimes. I mean, how about, with Billy Graham? Did he really need Grand Wizard to talk for him? Absolutely not.
No.
I think it was just more of a think about it. If superstar Billy Graham came out to the ring without nobody, he would have been cheered. It was the Grand Wizard who was the evil wizard.
That defined you as being a heel.
Yeah. Okay. You're going to come out with me because we need you to be a bad guy and stay that way. But
back in the day, I don't know if you guys remember Crusher Verdoux.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
The guy was, he had a phenomenal physique, but he had the personality of a brick.
Yeah.
And Albano was his manager. And that worked. Albano did all the talking. He got a main event with Bruno. He probably got a great payoff. And then he went on his way.
So we get some good comments going on. Obviously,
Sherry
Martel. I was gonna put her up there, but she was kind of late '80s, '90s. Her big thing was taking those bumps with Shawn Michaels. That was always a cool thing.
Yeah.
Then I could have thrown Sonny in there because she managed the Road Warriors as well, the Legion of Doom as they're called then. Eric Bischoff, same thing. General Skandar
Akbar, Devastation Incorporated.
He was awesome.
Synonymous with World Championship Wrestling from Texas. Oh yeah.
Skandar Akbar was a very strong guy, a power lifter too. Oh, he was no one to mess with either.
Oh wow.
He was a very capable amateur wrestler. Skandar Akbar was a really good athlete, believe it or not.
Yep. And somebody mentioned the Slickster, Foxhole Willie. Yep, there's a Slickster again right there. With the Big Boss Man and Akeem, formerly the One Man Gang. What did you guys think of that when One Man Gang turned into Akeem?
It was funny.
Yeah.
Did you think it was funny? I just thought because guys, I'm such
a bro. Mm-hmm. So bro.
I am such a historian of it. I hated when Vince started playing with these characters. Like Big Boss Man was what, Bubba Rogers or something like that?
Big Bubba,
right? It's like all of a sudden these guys, like I'm reading them one week in the wrestling magazine as this character, and then they show up in in WWF or WWE, whatever.
One Man Gang was a feared heel, and then he got made into a cartoon character. Same thing with Boss Man.
It's crazy. Another mouthpiece that I'm sure people love and hate right now in this industry is, of course, Jim Cornette. Here's a guy that could talk. There's no doubt about it. My TV sets on Saturday night, Georgia Championship Wrestling, world-class wrestling. This guy, you knew when he was on the microphone. He had that voice where you just wanted to reach through that screen and, shut him up. And whenever he took the bump, it was the greatest pop, too. It was the greatest pop.
He had lots of heat, man. Lots of heat.
He did have lots of heat as well. Another guy that I threw in here because I think he transcended the sport as well, even though I lied about late 80s, but technically he did kind of help in the late 80s. Percy Pringle, Paul Bearer.
Oh yeah.
He was famous even before Paul Bearer. He was Percy Pringle back in the day. I think my first sight of him was on World Class Championship Wrestling from Texas. He had some business going on there or something in the early 80s.
Manage everyone from Missing Link to Rick Rude. He had quite a collection of people. Yep. He had Rude in Florida. He had Rude in Texas as well. He had a memorable time. I think he scrapped also with the late Chris Von Erich.
Yeah.
He was one of his first opponents too. And wasn't afraid to get in there and mix it up for sure. And a great guy. He was a friend of Boston Wrestling back in the day. In fact, for several years, we had a toy drive that he kind of spearheaded, kind of orchestrated, and was named after him, the Paul Bearer toy drive at Christmas. So a very good guy and a great friend of my late friend, Dan Marotti. So love Paul Bearer.
I got a couple of local guys chiming in over on the Facebook side of things. Sean Wardlow is saying the House of Humperdinck in Central States was huge.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
That is something that I feel I missed out on. I would have loved to see Central States Wrestling. I always read about it in the magazines, just never saw it.
Yeah.
Just never saw it, couple other ones here. Bulldog Bob Brown, the interns, Omar Atlas, Haystacks Calhoun, all wrestled at Centerville High at one point. Imagine that.
Wow.
What?
Go figure. I know Rufus R. Jones came to town. Bruce. He was a big guy.
In Bruce's wheelhouse, how about Dr. Harvey Whippleman?
Oh, wow. Harvey
Whippler. Downtown Bruno.
Yep, Downtown Bruno. Where did he start out at?
Well, he had a long run in Memphis.
Memphis.
Yeah. Was it Memphis? Yeah. Okay.
Bruno, yeah, Downtown Bruno.
Why do I picture him with ECW? That's so weird.
He was later on.
Oh, he was. Okay. And speaking of ECW, I can't miss this guy, Paul Heyman, the man with the cell phone back in the 80s before cell phones were even cell phones, huh? And there he is with the original Bloodline on the bottom right there. That's a pretty old photo.
That's the Samoan SWAT team.
Yeah. Isn't that Rikishi?
That's Sami and Fatu. That's not Arthur and Sika.
No, of course not.
And like Cornette, Heyman started as a photographer at Ringside, but he started up here in the Northeast, whereas Cornette was down in Memphis down there. And
if you look real closely, he's doing an interview with Andy Kaufman in a bathroom stall with Freddie Blassie.
And the
reason being is Fred Blassie actually went to bat for him because he was kind of found out. He snuck into the Garden back in the day. He's in all the videos, especially when Pedro regains the Intercontinental title from Morocco.
Yeah.
If you watch the video closely, he's the guy jumping in the middle of the ring, in the middle of the TV angle. The TV angle, he jumped because he became a mark. He was cheering as opposed to taking photos next to Apter and all those guys. But I think he was questioned or looked at one point backstage, and Vince said something like, "Who is this guy?"
Yeah.
And Blassie actually came to his defense and says, "Oh, he's a photographer. He's legit. He takes photos for the magazines."
Yeah, he endeared himself to the Wizard and to Blassie.
Yeah, there's a picture of that around. I actually have that framed upstairs. I don't know why. See, there's just so many managers to go through.
I know, man. Yeah.
We would have to put a 20-minute reel together just on for everybody out there.
So I got a question for you guys, though. I mean, obviously, we don't see managers anymore. And do you think it's something that if they brought it back would enhance the current product?
No doubt. Yeah.
See, it depends on what wrestling outfit you're talking about. Now, today's WWE superstars, if you can't talk on the mic, you don't have a career. You know what I mean? These guys are actors. These guys are more entertainers now as opposed to just being the good looks and the muscle. Like, if you look around, like, you take a guy like Otis can talk. There's no doubt about it. He's a big guy. But Otis would be that guy that would need a manager. You know what I mean? But he's not. He can talk. He's very well-educated. He can talk. The
problem is they're so worried about the production, the fireworks and all the other stuff and the entrance music and the entrance themes and all that stuff. If we brought in managers, too, there'd be no product left. There'd be all the show before the show. You know, it's kind of crazy. I watched the wrestler. I can't remember. His entrance takes over a minute to come in.
Shoot the dog.
On WWE, but it's like, why? You know, we're wasting a minute plus of programming just bringing somebody in.
Well, that reminds me of MVP with Bobby Lashley. MVP would get an intro, even though he was the manager, and then Bobby Lashley would get the intro. So there's 2 or 3 minutes right there, and then he has a squash match, and that's the end of it. And MVP still did the talking, even though Bobby Lashley is very capable of talking. There's no doubt about it.
Both wrestlers, or all three, four wrestlers, everybody gets their own entrance too.
Right.
So it's not like you come back from commercial break, two people are already in the ring, and you have one entrance music, and they come in.
Yeah. See, I think it goes back to the greatest managers became great because they were needed back in the day. You had those wrestlers who could not talk. You had those wrestlers who probably couldn't even wrestle and needed a manager to help you out in that situation. And then again, I think of the modern day wrestling fan versus the fan back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, where if you turned the TV on, you didn't know who was bad or good unless there was a manager there to tell you either way.
Yeah, that's what defined you.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, Billy Graham is a great example. If he did not have a manager and he came on the scene like he did in 77 as superstar Billy Graham, the man of the hour, too sweet to be sour, that's a catchphrase that would have been on every T-shirt. It would have been popular as hell. He probably would have been there'd probably be no Hulkamania because he'd probably still be champion. You know what I mean? This is what I'm talking about. But you put him with the Grand Wizard, boom, he's hated or he's loved to be hated. It crosses those lines now. you know.
So hey, I have a question for you, Benny. Like, you have somebody like a Gorilla Monsoon, who even back then really wouldn't have needed a manager if they would have let him speak, because obviously the guy was so well spoken, and I think he could have pulled off any type of character. Or like in Abdullah the Butcher, if Abdullah would have spoken, I think. I don't think he would have been able to pull that Madman from Sudan gimmick off for all those years. Just the way he presents himself. He's a funny dude. He's a nice dude from Canada. So, you know, how do you feel about, like, you know, those guys? Those guys could talk, but they never really did when they were wrestling.
Yeah, you got to pardon my pup there in the background. But, I mean, take a guy like George Steele. Now, with George Steele, first saw him in the WWF. He actually cut a very eloquent promo, very early on. And then he came back a year later and he was a Neanderthal. And, you know, no explanation of how he went from a scholar to a Neanderthal, just like there was no explanation of how Monsoon went from, you know, speechless to now very fluent English. It just, you know, almost like they insulted our intelligence.
Well, I think George Steele had that electroshock therapy. Then it turned him into an animal, and then he had it again, and it turned him back.
Right. That was later on, though. That was in the 80s.
But he had it. He had it again to turn him back, though. Is what I'm saying. Yeah, I think
that's Tuesday Night Titans era back then.
That is indeed. Yep.
I always wonder where those doctors got their licenses from.
How now, brown cow? That was great.
Another one that I first saw on World Class Championship Wrestling from Texas was Baby Doll.
And then
NWA.
Ronnie Nefaro's guest on Thursday night.
Oh, there you go. And of course, she's been a What a Day guest as well. Obviously has great stories with Magnum TA and that feud with Tully Blanchard. And all, you know, I think that was the first time I ever saw a woman kissed slash had her dress ripped all in one scene. If you remember that, when Tully Blanchard and Magnum TA were having a face off, and Magnum TA grabbed Baby Doll and kissed her, and the announcer's going, "Oh my God, he's kissing her, and she likes it, and she likes it."
David Crockett.
And then she slaps Magnum TA, and then Magnum TA rips her dress, and I'm going, "Oh my God, they're showing this on TV!" Like, yeah, you know, nothing compared to nowadays. But when you're watching this at home on a Saturday at night, going, "This is great! I can't believe this!" But
you know, and as a young boy learning how to approach girls, I was taking studious notes. Must do this. Must do that.
Do not
anticipate a slap.
Do not rip the dress. That's all. Yeah, Loose Cannon said Missy was a gem. Teddy Long, there's another one. Doom in the Skyscrapers. That's a big
Peanut Head, as they used to call him back then when he was a heel. They called him Peanut Head.
I didn't start getting into the manager slash valets. Of course, you got Missy Hyatt. You got Francine. You got Nicola, obviously Baby Doll. Sable was one.
With Jimmy Garvin, Sunshine and Precious.
And Precious, yeah. They were more valets, you know. They weren't managers.
But they interfered, though. They did interfere.
Of course they did. They were part of the act. They great TV time and all of them, you know. It's unbelievable, some of the stuff back then. I'm just going through the stuff here. Let me see. Bobby Heenan and Jimmy Hart were great. Yep. Tony Schiavone was okay. I think they're just talking about mic skills now. Because I don't remember Tony Schiavone ever managing right now. He was just an announcer.
No.
Who we got here?
AEW part of the dynamic was the announcer interviewing that's something you don't see now. I mean, they all come to the ring with a mic and they just do their promo, where back in the day, I mean, I remember Gordon Solie sitting at his desk with Harley Race, and they were watching a videotape of a match, and nothing could be more real.
I mean,
it's like they're breaking down the seventh game of the World Series.
Studying the opponent, getting ready, getting that upper edge. Oh, yeah.
But they made it so realistic that you wanted to, wherever they wrestled next, you wanted to go there.
See, but when you're watching videotape back then, that is like streaming to us nowadays. Back then, that was like unheard of. You know, watching a video. Where do you get a video? Who taped the match, first of all? Where'd the video come from? You know, things like that. That to me was like, wow, that's pretty cool. That's like state-of-the-art stuff there.
Nice. Yeah, I like the old Omni too. They would do the old like reel to reel tapes and then play it. Gordon would play it on a Saturday night.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes it was taken by a fan. I remember him actually thanking a fan on the air for recording. It, you know, it very well could not have been a fan. It could have been someone else, but just Gordon thanking the fan for doing this because it wasn't really regular practice back then.
You know, it's funny. The champions now back then, obviously Backlund, Graham, Bruno, it was always a face really for the most part that held the title. So it was these, you know, the Wizard, Albano, Wizard Albano and Blassie that would always funnel the challenges to Backlund and all that. But I was shocked that the tag team titles more or less were held by a lot of ruthless bad guys, managed by Captain Lou. I mean, what is he over like 20 something tag teams now that he managed to tag team gold? I mean,
he holds the record, whatever that final number is.
I stopped at 17.
Yeah.
I was like, I think one of his final ones was, Wyndham and Rotunda leading multi, you know, was WrestleMania 2 they won the titles? Because they lost to WrestleMania or whatever.
Yeah, the Bulldogs, I think, was his last one. The
Bulldogs, that's what it was. Ozzy Osbourne, WrestleMania 2, that's right. Yep. So, like, why did they give Captain Lou all the tag titles? You know what I mean? Like, why couldn't they give some to Grand Wizard or Freddie Blassie and people like that?
It was funny, though, because, like you said, the WWF for a 20-year period from 63 to 83, you basically had three champions. You had Bruno, you had Pedro, and you had Backlund. You had Ivan, you had Stasiak, and you had
Transition Kings. Yeah.
And Superstar. Superstar was the only one that had it for more than a couple of weeks. But then the tag teams, they alternated between heel and babyface. But the NWA, they alternated their main title. It would be on a Briscoe, but then it'll be on a Harley Race.
Yeah. Jay Will got a good one. The Rock with the Nation of Domination. Wasn't he more or less in the background during the Nation of Domination? It was more.
Ron Simmons was out on the front.
Ron Simmons. I mean, you talk about somebody who should have been in the front, The Rock. And he's, you know, we didn't know, of course, what he was going to be to this day. But looking back on it, going, boy, man, they could have really capitalized with The Rock being, you know, the head of that. But that's how you got to start, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, well, he started to get more and more mic time, too. See, you know, he kind of unofficially rose to that position. You know, I know Farouk was often out front, and rightly so. But I think Rock was on the rise there, and I think that's part of the reason why he really took it to the next level, you know?
Yeah.
Because of that faction, because of his involvement, and because he became more prominent there. Yeah.
All right, who's Maria Antoinette Davis? She was really good. Who is that? Maria Davis is saying that. Is she talking about herself?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Maria
Davis. Know that was Maria's middle name.
Maria Antoinette Davis. She was really good. Wow. Okay. We have to Google that. No, wait. Don't. We can't. This is a family-oriented show. So, Missy. Yep. Missy Hyatt. Yep. She was a gem. I'm just going through the Sable with Mark Merrow. Now, again, that's valet. Really? I mean, could you really constitute that as a manager, so to speak?
No, not really. She was never a mouthpiece.
It's a case where the manager kind of eclipses the talent in terms of shine and popularity, you know?
You can't say mouthpiece when you're referencing Sable. Come on, will you? Come on. Gorilla Monsoon, he never managed, right? He was just more of an announcer backstage role.
Right.
Just going through the chats here. Bo James, a.k.a. Jimmy Garvin. The Garvin brothers, Ron and Terry, yuck. It's Jay Will. Yep.
One name we haven't mentioned though was Paul Jones, who primarily managed the Mid-Atlantic, the Paul Jones Army.
Yep. There's a picture of Paul Jones right there.
Number one, Paul Jones.
Yep.
Baron von Raschke. Him. They feuded with Jimmy Valiant for years in the Carolinas.
Yeah.
Who do we have in the AWA besides Bobby Heenan that managed? Did we have any other managers in the AWA at the time?
Sherry Martel managed Buddy Rose and Doug Summers to a couple of tag teams.
That was later, not early though, right? This was later on though.
That was in the mid-80s, like mid-80s, 86 or so.
Yeah, because I think I remember seeing them on ESPN when they got that cable deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I only knew of Sherry Martel when she beat Fabulous Moolah for the title. And then for some reason, she went into the managerial ranks after that, but could take a bump. I saw her in a steel cage match, her and Shawn Michaels versus the Ultimate Warrior. Saturday afternoon, I took my son to a steel cage match at the Old Garden.
A matinee.
Before they tore it down, too. It was like 91 or 92, before it became the Fleet Center.
Yeah.
And, nobody there. I would say not even the bottom floor was crowded. That was it.
So you didn't sit behind a beam or anything?
Nope. I didn't have to sit in the stadium seats. Nope. And Sherry took a huge bump off the top of the cage, courtesy of the Ultimate Warrior. And I was like, oh my God. Like, you could already tell that the Attitude Era was forming then, when women like that were taking some serious bumps at house shows.
Yeah.
We're talking house shows now. We're not talking like on TV and all that stuff. This was a steel cage match with Ultimate Warrior and, of course, Shawn Michaels. And she got in after the match, and something was going on top of the cage, and they just pushed her right up. I was like, wow.
Well, Bobby Heenan used to always say that Sherry could take half the guys anyway. I bet you she could take Sean back then.
Fabulous.
Joe's got another good one here. He's got a Diamond Dallas Page. You know,
yeah,
started off as the manager.
Yeah, he was a late. Yeah. He was a late bloomer, right? 35 DDP started. He was late.
Yes,
yeah, definitely a 35, 36. Yeah. Now we would be journalistically irresponsible if we did not throw out the name of John Tolos. Mike Monty's favorite wrestler.
The coach. Yeah.
There are no bonus points for John Tolos references.
Oh.
How about the coach?
Not until Thursday, right?
I'm still smart for my 7-point penalty for disrespection.
Hey, I got to eat my salad early. I'm fine.
I was trying to find a picture of John Tolos, see if I could find one.
Got to find a coach picture, yeah, with a whistle.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. There we go. We got that.
With Bowen Blake.
Bowen Blake. Let me see here. There's a whole bunch of them. So he had a whistle, he said?
Here's a name.
Championship more into the foreground now.
What's that?
You got to bring your championship more into the foreground so you can show it off to these guys.
Oh, yeah, right here? Oh, yeah. Let me
I'll throw out a name that's pretty elusive, Benny, you might get. Saul Weingaroff.
Yes.
He managed a team.
The Von Bronners were there?
Yes, he did. He also managed a Young Samoan team. Look at the title.
There you go. The 30 champ right there.
I love it, man.
There you go.
That's a sweet strap, Joe.
I got a whole bunch of them. I got a whole bunch.
Sweet strap. You can mail it to me. I'll tell you.
There you go.
Saul Weingaroff was a manager of some repute for a long time.
Oh yes, same with J.C. Dykes with the
Infernos. In fact, they had a little rivalry thing going too. And I think Saul's son George wrestled. He was legally blind, which is crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but he wrestled in the Poppos ICW with Lanny and Randy and the crew down there. Yeah.
I'd much rather be legally drunk. I mean, if it's legal, what's the problem?
John Tolos was called the Golden Greek, right?
Yes.
The Golden Greek.
Babe Ruth in the chat.
Before Spiros Arion, or as Ernie Ladd would call him, Spiros Arius.
Getting back to Wild Red Berry, did he let his hair grow out later on in life? Like, didn't he have crazy eyebrows or something like that?
Not that I know.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Wild Bull Curry.
Wild Bull Curry.
Wild Bull Curry. What a legend he was.
Yeah. He used to scare me. That's the guy who scared me in wrestling magazines when I saw him. Like, this guy's out to lunch, man.
And Benny, you guys know his grandson you guys know pretty well?
We had the Rocket, Fred Curry, was on the show twice. Yeah.
What a good dude. He really is. Very nice. Good interview.
That restaurant he has in Rhode Island. It looks really, really good.
I want to get down too. Yeah.
Maybe we'll all get the Monty and the Pharaoh and Dan and Benny discount.
The Dan and Benny discount.
Maybe we'll even compass a meal. I want a lobster roll. That's all.
I'll wear my T-shirt just to see. I won't say anything. I'll just wear a T-shirt. It's funny.
When I was doing my research for Luscious Johnny B,
I
didn't realize his real name was John Sullivan.
Like the fighter. Yeah. So how's this now, Joe? J.J. Dillon's real name is Jim Morrison.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God.
That's a trip, man.
A little bit older than the rock star, right? I think J.J. is about 80 now.
Oh, yeah. J.J.'s up there. But J.J.'s looked the same for 50, 60 years.
He was quite glassy. Like, you know.
Yeah.
His high school picture looked like somebody from the senior home.
Yeah. Well, back then people looked older when they were younger too, which is crazy.
How did that work?
I don't know.
Because Superstar Billy Graham was like 85 when I was 12.
Oh, yeah, he was road weary by then. I mean, he went into a deep depression after he lost the title to Backlund and all that. I mean, his autobiography says it all.
Yep. And I think he was rumored to be dead on like three different occasions, too. Yeah. So that'll lead.
What a job he did as champion. I really think he should have. He deserved an extended run. I really believe that.
Yeah. If he had it in him, though, Benny, that's just it, you know? Stars like him shine very bright. They burn bright, but, you know, they can burn out. So I wonder.
6 months out of it, at least.
He's deserving for sure.
Yeah, right.
No doubt about it. I mean, but when he came to the karate gimmick and all that stuff, you could just see the wear and tear in his body. And then he went into all those surgeries. He incorporated those real surgeries into storylines. And it was the years of steroid use and the Hep C and all that stuff that he had just really did a number on him.
Yeah.
And you could tell. But then all of a sudden he came back. He looked bigger than ever after all that. he got a second wind or something. But especially all those pile driver music videos and all that stuff. That guy was just as big as Hogan, if not bigger.
Dr. George to the rescue.
Yeah.
One of my favorite storylines of all time revolves around managers, which was when Jimmy Snuka was on Rogers' Corner, whatever they called it. And Buddy Rogers uncovered the fact that, you know, Jimmy, you have no money.
Yeah.
And Jimmy, Buddy, would you be my manager? And
I love that, you know, Benny.
Yeah.
That was one of the most, to me, emotional. I mean, I marked out for that big time.
Me too. Dude, we're on the same wavelength.
They hugged, he squished the microphone that was on Roger's lapel. I'm like, oh, they didn't script this. This is real. This is really happening. Because normally they would just put the mic over him.
Yeah.
Buddy was wearing the mic or had that. He was holding the mic or whatever.
When did that happen? 81, 82-ish?
No, I think that was either 83. Late 82 or early 83. Okay. And it's the first time that I heard Snuka speak ever because he was quiet. He didn't say a word.
Very soft-spoken, too.
It was the spring of 83 because I went to the October 83 cage match with him in Morocco.
All right, yeah, which was classic.
He got pile driven by his first feud was as a babyface.
Ray Stevens,
yeah.
Yep, but he also had a nice little match with Captain Lou at the Garden first. Got his payback, and that's what Garden.
Bloodbath that was.
That was the first time I seen a guy put razor blades on his fingernails. Holy Jesus, this guy's out of his
mind. But yeah, who's the worst? I think either he or Bruno was the worst blader of all time. Bruno was a horrible blader.
Well, Bruno wasn't used to blading either. That's the problem, you know?
I mean, he did blade plenty of times, but he was not very good at it.
But you know the thing is about Bruno?
What's that?
He would bleed ragu.
Yeah, but boom.
That's awful.
He's here all week. Doc Journey was mentioned as well.
She was very attractive.
Yep. Genius Lanny Poffo. That's right. He got his start as... he was actually already wrestling, right? He came in and became the Genius. Then he started managing later on, right?
The Beverly Brothers.
The Beverly Brothers, yep.
But before that, Mr. Perfect, who managed whom? Did Perfect manage Lanny or Lanny manage Perfect? Or were they just a team? I forget. Yeah, but
I don't know. Mr. Perfect, is always Bobby Heenan. But
yeah.
I just was shocked that Kurt Hennig would leave the WWF and become AWA world champion and then come back as Mr. Perfect. I'm like, you talk about a transformation of a wrestler.
Yeah.
You know, so, well, this has been a good hour, guys. What do you think?
Been an hour already? Jeez. Yeah.
Any final thoughts on this? We had a good list. We had a good chat. Everything was going good.
It brought back a lot of good memories.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff here. A lot of good stuff, you know. I mean
how, you know, watching on Saturday morning without Lou Albano or, you know, the Wizard or Blassie or any of those guys. I mean, how much more did they add to it?
They added a lot.
Everything.
I was just, like I said at the beginning of the program, I was just bummed that they never frequented the old Boston Garden, like the town.
Yeah.
It just wasn't the same when the bad guys were, like, I remember when George Steele would come out. Like, at least somebody like Blassie would try and control him. When George Steele went loose at the Garden, he went.
How did he find his way to the ring?
Oh, I don't know. He'd go in the crowd. It was crazy. Huh. Absolutely crazy. Same thing with the Samoans. They had to be guided to the ring by Lou Albano, but all of a sudden, the Boston Garden, they're able to walk out to the ring, no problem.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So, those are the good days. Those are the good days.
They really were. I mean, how real it was to us and how we couldn't wait to go to shows. And I mean, I used to go to the Nassau Coliseum and I'd buy my ticket for the next month at intermission. Like, you can't do that now. I mean, if I go to Amalie Arena, I mean, if I had gone to the Trop for Royal Rumble, I mean, they won't be there for probably at least a year.
Phil, here's a story. I remember during halftime or intermission, they would tell you the matches for the following month.
Yes,
absolutely.
Tickets would go on sale that Monday at Hub Ticket. Remember Hub Ticket?
Yep.
Right in the corner of Chinatown, Neyland Street, all right there. I was on a train after school that Monday going to buy my tickets for the following
month. That's hardcore, man.
That's hard. And I would get that guy. I'd make him pull out the seating chart, which was very rare back then because they didn't have that. And I'd be like, I want to sit right here, and I want this seat, Loge 2, Loge 1, all that. And you had to get there earlier, or else they would have been sold. And
I always got those
seats forever. I was Loge 1 or 2. He'd see me coming every month. Oh, yeah, they're here.
So, the live experience was so exciting, man. Oh, yeah. It was magical, you know?
From the
end. It really was.
I mean, you just had – you heard the hum of the crowd, and you knew somebody was coming. No pyro. No.
Remember the old ramps going up at the old garden, Phil? Remember that?
Yeah.
Ramp, it was insane. It was like the longest walk getting to your seat. But yet when you were leaving, you just went right down and out. It was like, oh, my God, that was quick.
It makes sense, too. They want to build up everything, get you in there, get you excited. Then when it's done, all right, get out.
Yep. Get out. Open the floodgates. That's it.
You know, but in summary, my opinion is the managers were just as instrumental, if not more, in selling tickets than the wrestlers were.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Yeah, the Wizard's still one of my favorites. He's been gone for 40 years or so, but still has left quite an impression, you know?
I think
he never got, never took a bump. I don't remember him taking a bump during, did he ever?
Nope. If he did, he would get brushed up accidentally, inadvertently, and that would be a big deal then too, because you'd want his turban to fly off or something. You know, you'd want those sunglasses to go flying.
That was the first real 10-bell salute I saw on TV. Is when
the
Wizard and Sergeant Slaughter, I think, was in the ring too. And I'm like, well, what happens to him now?
Yeah,
like, you know, it's like crazy, crazy times.
Bill, did you ever see him? I never did see him as Abdullah Farouk managing the Sheik. I've never seen that. I would love to see if his character was any different.
It exists out there. I think he wore more of a fez rather than a turban, you know?
Yeah, actually, he let me see. I think the picture I have of him with Billy Graham.
Like Fred Flintstone, the water buffaloes, maybe? Or
exactly, yeah.
right there on the right. He kind of had that turban on the right.
Yeah, he did. In fact, he had more of a squared one, too, back in the day, too. But, you know, the mystique. I mean, I didn't see a picture of him without his gimmick on until five years ago or so.
Yep.
It's pretty amazing.
But I do recall the Sheik and Bruno had a huge cage match at the Garden. I think he was there for that.
Was he?
There's old photos of that somewhere online. Because that's me. That's what I do on Saturday nights now, is I go trolling and I look for this stuff. And you'd be amazed at some of the stuff that's online now.
We are fans. I mean, you're a fan. I love it.
That's it. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us for Wrestling Remembered. Big week coming up, right? I get to defend the title this Thursday on the 30. You can catch that on the Monty and the Pharaoh YouTube channel. I want to thank everybody in the chat. A lot of people tuning in today. Chat was very active. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
E40.
And, of course, what do you got? You got True Crime this week, Benny? Or what do you got?
I'm working on the script for the next episode, and I wanted to invite you guys again because you were so great with Wendy Bulger.
Super fun, man. I love it.
Dr. Sam Shepard.
That sounds wicked good.
Doctor who became a wrestler and who invented the mandible claw way before Mick Foley did.
How cool. I know, huh?
And referee of the 30 ESO, you're going to be wearing that shirt Thursday night or what?
Absolutely. I'll be ready to help you guys out. And Joe, if the Venmo comes again, you can hold on to that title.
That Dan 10% surcharge kills me every time, man. Come on.
I think, Bruce, you need to like announce like personal foul, 7 points, the player for disrespect. You know, just like you have to announce the penalty.
No, I agree. We got to we've got a lot of stuff coming up the line, you know, sound effects, a new set, it's a little more interactive. So we got some.
How about instead of a standing eight count, you get like a minus 8 seconds off each person's time? That's it. Oh, you're out of time. I had 10 seconds. What are you talking about?
Better watch out. Phil will come up with something like a presidential referendum for the night or something like that. And
you know what you do? Order, right? Hide the clock and then penalize them if they go over the time. How's that if they get on your bad side?
There you go.
Hide that clock.
All right, guys, until next week, I'll see you guys on Thursday. If anything pressing happens before then, we'll probably pop on at some point.
See you on Wednesday night. Or what
see you in Centerville, right?
Wednesday in Centerville, Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Central, 8 o'clock your time. I don't know if you guys are up that late, but.
I struggle to stay up a little later, yeah.
They give me my warm milk at the home at like 6:15. So.
Oh, that's good, that's good.
After Matlock, and my tapioca, I'll be tuning in.
There you go.
Just don't take your meds the night before. You'll be all set. All right, guys. Thanks for being on. We'll see you guys next week. And thank everybody for tuning in to Wrestling Remembered.
God bless you guys.
Yo, what a day, Lowry. Until next time, we'll see you guys later.
Peace.